Radio Catskill.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Coming up in the second half of the program, our coverage of Woodstock Anniversary Week continues with a very special feature. A woman returning to the original site 56 years after she and five of her friends piled into one VW bug and drove to the Woodstock Music and Arts Fair from her home in Lancaster, PA. She gets a special guided tour of places that most folks never see at Bethel Woods, and you get to come along for the ride. And if you happen to hear this story when it debuted this morning on Radio Catskill, stay with us until the end because I have a bonus story from her tour that we haven't even aired yet. That's right, you get to hear it first. Also coming up in just a moment, we have a feature story on food insecurity in our area. And the news is not good. Food insecurity surging. And the folks on the ground trying to keep people fed saying that it feels like we're moving backwards on the issue. That story's coming right up. But first, a coalition backed by drug manufacturers is ramping up their lobbying efforts in New York to deter health insurers from limiting when they'll cover expensive name-brand prescriptions. In some cases, patients are required to try less expensive generic drugs before insurance plans will cover the cost of more expensive drugs that were initially prescribed. Ashira Vantrees, Director of Legal Strategy and Advocacy for AIMED Alliance, tells Public Radio's The Capitol Press Room that health insurers should be more transparent about potential savings from the fail-first model.
And I think there's a misconception often put on individuals' chronic conditions that, you know, they have a preference for certain medications, when in reality, what's happening for many of these patients is that they've already tried and failed on these medications, but without appropriate guardrails, they can be required to try and fail on that again. And so for them, they know that it's going to be a relapse in symptoms, that can be time off work, and all of these other consequences that aren't often calculated when we're talking about cost savings directly for insurance.
The AIMED Alliance is expected to push legislation imposing new transparency requirements on health insurers during the 2026 legislative session in Albany. And thank you to the New York Public News Network for those reports. In Sullivan County, increased food and housing costs, along with federal funding cuts, are really starting to hit home. The Cornell Cooperative Extension's Community Cupboard says that emergency calls for food aid are up 100% in just the last 3 months. The Community Cupboard delivers meals to about 700 people each week, including running a 7 days a week emergency delivery operation. But with food insecurity on the rise, federal USDA cuts and proposed Medicaid and SNAP cuts also looming, the organization's already reached its capacity limit. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar joined the Sullivan Fresh Cupboard team on their morning route to learn how they're navigating this uncertain future.
We're on Route 17 right now, heading to another part of Sullivan County, and I'm following the Sullivan Fresh van onto the next drop-off.
On Monday mornings, Shanice Owens and Lynn Calavito make more than 70 drop-offs of food across Sullivan County. They'll rotate who does what during their 4 to 6 hour route. While Shanice drives the Sullivan Fresh van, Lynn hand delivers a bag or box of food to a neighbor, or vice versa.
We are at our third delivery today, and Lynn is just bringing the box of food to the person's door.
Okay, and then where are you heading next?
We have one more apartment in this complex.
That's Shanice Owens. She's one of the Sullivan Fresh program coordinators. Within just a 2 mile stretch, she and Calavito make about 7 individual stops across 3 different apartment complexes on Monday morning. Their van is packed with dozens and dozens of bags and boxes of fresh meats, box pasta, milk cartons, and prepackaged meals like lentil soup.
Veggies, fruits, meat, dairy, depending on what we have.
Right.
We try to always make sure that there's always all the food groups.
Program coordinator Lynn Calavito says the Sullivan Fresh Cupboard started as a grassroots effort during the COVID pandemic in 2020.
Everybody was told not to go out. How are people supposed to get food? So Martin started, he had gotten some extra lunches from the Monticello Central School, and he would deliver those. So that's out of his car. So it kind of started there.
So it was very, like, informal. Mutual.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And just trying to help each other out kind of thing.
The Covered delivered 365 consecutive days when they first started, even on holidays like Thanksgiving. Now it's quickly grown under the umbrella of Sullivan County's Cornell Cooperative Extension's Sullivan Fresh program. Before heading out for the day's route, Owens and Calavito individually pack each bag with an assortment of food and beverages.
I'm just going to give everybody, if I can, a couple of radishes.
They say they deliver to people across the county, to their neighbors in houses, apartment complexes, hotels and motels, cars and tents, from one end of the county to the other.
Folks in Monticello, Liberty, Fallsburg, Lac Sheldrake, Mountaindale, Woodridge, there's probably a few other towns. We deliver once a week, too. We have pickups on Wednesdays, so we have some other areas like Swan Lake and Woodburn, just to name a couple, that will deliver twice a month. And then we have a Livingston Manor route once a month and seniors at various locations in Liberty and Monticello once a month.
But Covered staff say that the need for food assistance is rapidly growing in Sullivan County, far beyond the team's capacity. At last Thursday's Sullivan County Government Services Committee meeting, CCE's Prevention Programs Issue Leader Martin Calavito said emergency calls to the Covered are up 100% in the last 3 months.
Our commitment is that somebody who doesn't have food, we deliver food within 24 hours. We can't put them on our regular route, the 700 plus people a week, because of capacity issues. So I don't want to say it's doing, and a lot of the referrals, one of the things that's really worrying us now is that we're getting more and more referrals from folks who do reside in higher education or work for some of the agencies that this room kind of oversees.
Yeah.
We're getting more and more calls from these agencies now. So I don't want to put a damper on things, but it's just the reality of the situation, right? So the Covered now currently is, I don't want to say doing well, but it's working, it's operating, it's meeting all of its objectives and plus. My concern is moving forward, you know, being able to continue it, you know, next year because of the increased capacity, increased need, and what's going on with resources.
The Sullivan Fresh Covered team say they deliver to approximately 700 people each week, making roughly 260 plus stops weekly. But more folks are in need, says Calavito. The program currently has a wait list for families and individuals waiting to get on their weekly route. Calavito told Radio Catskill that in past years the Covered operated, he'd get 1 to 3 emergency calls a week. But now,
we're getting more than one a day now when you do the course of the week. We got 3 yesterday. We have 1 today. So we're getting them daily.
The sharp rise in food insecurity comes when food aid programs, food banks, and pantries are still navigating the impact of federal budget cuts.
Being at capacity is one thing. We have access to much less food, much less cost-free food from the regional food bank of the Hudson Valley over the past 3 or 4 months because of cuts to USDA and so on and so forth. So the stuff we used to get last year that was cost-free and covered by USDA, things like meat, eggs, fish, canned goods, now we have to pay for. And it's becoming harder and harder with this current situation funding-wise and what feels like a lack of consideration for those who are suffering in our communities. You know, my biggest fear are the people that we love the most, are the people we need the most, and those are the people who are suffering, because if we can stabilize them, we stabilize our communities. And it seems like, it feels like we're going backwards.
Lynn Calavito says the lack of transportation in the county and rising costs of housing have been major drivers for why residents need additional food aid. A new report from Pattern for Progress shows that the cost of housing in the Hudson Valley is rising faster than wages for renters and home buyers. From 2024 to 2025, the average hourly wage of Sullivan County renters rose less than 1%, only 8 cents from $15.13 to $15.21 an hour. But the fair market rent for a two-bedroom apartment in the county saw a substantial jump during that time period. Rent went up 13% from $1,078 to $1,223 a month. With the current proposed Medicaid and SNAP cuts in Trump's recently signed Big Beautiful Bill, Lynn Colavito is worried about how many more people will need their support.
It just scares me that I keep hearing more and more people, they're not having enough resources to get their own food, just not making it through the month. I'm sure it's not everybody, but it's too many everybody's. And I'm just worried if people's SNAP benefits are reduced, besides who we're helping now, can we help more?
Martin Colavito says that local and state officials need to step up to see how urgent the issue is.
Now, then I will say this, and I probably shouldn't, but I think more of the people who are drawing paychecks politically need to get out into the community. Rather than look for headlines, they need to step out into the community. And not for my sake, but for the sake of the people that are employing them.
Sullivan Fresh's Community Cupboard is open for food pickup on Tuesdays and Fridays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. in Liberty. You can also find a complete list of food pantries and free meals in the county in the Sullivan 180 Community Guide at sullivan180.org. In Liberty, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dolb. And 56 years ago today, 18-year-old Minna Traugott was getting ready for what would be one of the greatest weekend adventures of her life, driving in a packed VW Bug from her home down in Lancaster County, PA, all the way up to the Woodstock Music and Arts Fair and Aquarian Exposition. A few weeks ago, she returned to the site for the first time to get a very special tour. I was lucky enough to be invited along with my microphone, which means you were also invited along. So join us now for this exploration of the grounds at Bethel Woods, an exploration of memory and history, and an exploration of what made Woodstock work. And spoiler alert, it was folks like Minna.
My name is Minna Traugott, and I'm here in Bethel Woods to see all the Woodstock Festival exhibits because I went to Woodstock in August of 1969. I was 18 years old. I was between my freshman and sophomore year of college, and I was home, living at home in Berwyn, Pennsylvania, and I was working to save money for going back to school and had a number of friends from high school that we all hung out together, and we bought our tickets for $18 for 3 days. They all came to my house, and we all loaded in a Volkswagen Beetle, six of us, or seven, I'm not quite sure.
Minna Traugott is at Bethel Woods in early August 2025 with a small group, including her husband and friends, and they're about to get on a six-seat golf cart for a full tour of the parts of the original Woodstock Festival site that most folks don't see at Bethel Woods. It's called the Main Gate Tour, and it's led by Neil Hitch, chief curator at Bethel Woods.
The Main Gate Tour is really new this year in 2025, and it's a tour focused on the planning of Woodstock. Literally, the question is, did you know there's a main gate at Woodstock? And everyone's like, no, I thought there was no fences and no one took tickets and it was a free concert. And you say, well, there's a main gate, right? Like, that's very planned. It's built. You can almost see pictures of it. And so this idea of how camping was planned and the free stage was planned and the free kitchen was planned and the main gate was planned and the Bendy Woods was planned. I mean, that's what this tour focuses on. And so by using this golf cart to get people out, we're really to be able to talk about or interpret some of these lesser known parts of the festival.
For most people who attended, your experience was either this side of the stage, camping, eating, bathing, whatever, or the other side?
I think I was the other side.
You were the other side. So
that's why I didn't. Everybody says, well, everybody was nude at Woodstock, right? And I'm like, no. I didn't really see that. I saw it in the movie, and I'm sure there were, but no, it wasn't, like, rampant where I was.
No one sees all of Woodstock. Everyone saw the Woodstock that was right in front of them.
Yeah, I didn't.
What we say is Woodstock is not one story. It's 450,000 stories. That everyone has a very unique and very interesting story. And this is the historic field where the stage was.
Parking the golf cart at the top of the hill, Neil uses laminated photos of the site in 1969 to help Minna connect what she's seeing today to what she saw 56 years ago.
So this is the stage. Like, this is where we are. You can see this line here. That this is the Yasgur farm where everyone is.
I would say we were right about in here.
When you sat for the show.
Where we sat the whole time for the show. Oh. We were pretty high up on the hill, like right in here.
Cool.
I remember we wanted to sit on the crest as much as we could of the hill, but be able to move easily and not have to go through, you know, the whole crowd. Okay. It wasn't as much about being as in front of the stage or down by the stage as it was being able to hear everything really well. And we could hear everything really, really well. That sound was amazing that I remember.
What are you thinking? You sit up here and look down at this field now.
It looks smaller. I don't know, you know, I guess because it's not filled with people, but it looks like, oh, I thought it was further to the stage. I mean, it was massive amount of people.
It's a comment that everyone makes, that it just looks smaller than I remember. Your experience of seeing the site today as it is just so different than the overwhelming nature of the festival. And what a lot of people will talk about is just you weren't prepared, and every sense is just heightened. Everything is so much. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
The mud and the rain and the music and the people. It's not the same without that just sensory overload of what the festival was. I talked to someone about 2 weeks ago that was here, much like you, and their memory was trying, like, you just went from, the middle up to a restroom, and it was 45 minutes, and you were constantly stepping on someone, that you couldn't walk through the crowd without stepping on people.
Which is one of the reasons we didn't go further down the hill, because it was just more comfortable. We could see and we could hear, but we could also get back and forth to wherever we wanted to go. So that was, I guess, a pretty good decision. We didn't have to step over too many people. We probably did, but I don't remember it being that difficult.
Now, Minna Troggitt has clear memories of walking through the woods to get from the stage area to her campsite back in 1969. Well, this woodsy area is still there. It was known as the Bindi Bazaar, which had vendors and three different paths for folks to take.
I think it looked pretty much like this.
Is it feeling familiar to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was very calm and peaceful. There were a lot of people on the path going in both directions. A lot of traffic. But it was fun. People watching, saying hi. You know, it was just a really happy, fun atmosphere. But there were a lot of people on the path most of the time.
We were just kind of out in the open in the sun and the heat, mm-hmm. and now we're in this kind of green shaded world here.
Yeah, I think that was nice to get into this calm, you know, secluded kind of area.
But is your recollection kind of walking through this area to get to where your tent was?
Yes. I think so. We had to walk through woods to get to the tent. Now, whether it was on this exact path or not, I'm not sure. But I do remember going on this path to get to the bad trip tents.
So on one side of the Bindi Woods was the main stage and festival area for the Woodstock Festival, the part that most folks see when they come to Bethel Woods today. On the other side of these woods is an area that most people don't see. This is where many things were, including the main gate, a free stage, the Movement City, and the Hog Farm and the Hog Farm's freakout tent, which Minna remembers very clearly.
We stood in the entrance and looked in, and nobody came up to us immediately. They were all tending to people. And I remember just being like kind of overwhelmed at how calm. I mean, there's so much going on outside and the music and everything. But once just standing inside the entrance, it was incredibly calm. And incense was burning. I think there was, you know, music, sitar music, very soothing, perfect environment for people that were in that state. And very calm, talked very softly. People came up to us and said, we don't know, you know, I think we did know his name. We said, this is so-and-so, and we don't really know him, but he was having a hard time, so we thought we'd bring him here. And they said, you did the right thing. We'll take good care of him. It was that simple. And it was I was really so grateful and so impressed that they were able to take care of him that way. And all the people, I mean, there were a lot of cots. There were a lot of people lying on cots. It was a pretty big tent. It was very calm and soothing.
I mean, one of the things we talk about this area today, again, in an interpretation of a historic event, is we call this the place where peace happened. You know, there's 9 months of planning. Peace wasn't an accident. Peace was the plan.
Hmm. Well, it was evident. It was totally the atmosphere. But it really wasn't planned, because how could you plan for the number of people?
So again, what I say is there's 9 months of planning, and then you get overwhelmed by 450,000 people. The plan for toilets fails. The plan for food fails. The plan for rain fails. But the plan for peace succeeds. And the plan for peace created an environment where the mob mentality was peace.
Absolutely. There was a young man that just wasn't being very kind, and he was being kind of loud and obnoxious. And everybody was like, it's not cool. You know, man, just mellow out. It's okay. Not cool. And it worked. But everybody, they weren't like, get out of here, or, you know, threatening him or anything. It was just talking him down and saying, that's, you know, that's not how we want to be here.
Peace.
Yeah, peace.
Now, the last part of Minna's tour that I would like to share with you today is a moment that I think speaks to a lot of what this trip was about and trips like this are about, exploring memory to piece together what happened. And that's a big part of what the team at the Museum at Bethel Woods does to preserve the history of Woodstock and communicate what it means to the rest of us. They gather stories, gather facts, research the documents and the photos, and are able to piece together the story of what happened. Whether that's something as big and philosophical as planning for peace, or something as everyday as just dealing with the weather.
Do you know what days it actually rained, or when it actually rained?
No.
Because I don't remember it raining at all on Friday. We got here early Friday morning, slept on the field, and woke up to Richie Havens, because we'd been up all night, and we'd actually taken psilocybin. That's why we all fit in the Volkswagen Beetle so well. And everybody was partying. But then we fell asleep, we woke up to Richie Havens, and I always thought it was him playing Here Comes the Sun, but that was my fantasy, because he didn't play that in that set. I don't remember what it was, but I knew it was Richie Havens. And then we camped that night and, you know, saw next day John Sebastian, Country Joe, The Who, which was unbelievable. And I don't remember it raining.
So one of the things in how memories work in a way, right? This is how memories work. Very few people like have a memory of being wet or being hungry or being uncomfortable. Now, everyone was wet, and everyone was hungry, and everyone was uncomfortable.
I don't remember it. We were burnt out, and we decided as a group on Sunday morning, let's just go home. And we did, and we went back to our comfortable houses and had showers and all that. But I'm not sorry we left when we did. It was time for us to leave. I don't know that we would have been able to enjoy the rest of it, because we were just tired and whatever.
There's one is on Sunday. A lot of people leave on Sunday for that. Like, you have been up all night long and you've heard some of the best bands in the world. It's just this experience that is so exhausting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will leave. They have to go back to work. But Joe Cocker comes on at 1 o'clock, and at 2 o'clock on Sunday is the massive rainstorm. Mm. That's the one that's in the movie. And that people
at 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Afternoon.
Okay.
And so people that were caught in that also then a lot of people just say that I'm done. Like that's mm-hmm. and people that dodge it or that aren't here for that have a very different story. So if you left Sunday, your story is very different.
I don't remember torrential pain because I didn't experience them, I guess.
What was it like going back home after those 3 days? Do you remember what it was like immediately afterwards?
I do remember when I walked in the house and I was walking up the stairs from our garage basement, and my mom is in the kitchen and she sees me. I have never seen my mother more happy to see me than she did that day. I don't know what was out there in the news, but she was worried to death about all of us. She didn't know if I'd come home alive or something. That's, you know, and can you imagine with the press today what the stories might have been told that would be totally untrue? And I think a little bit of that happened back then even, because or it has been since, or it's been misconstrued, or people have been led to believe, because whatever picture they've gotten, it's just kind of, oh, that was just a big party, that was silly, everybody did drugs, you know, it was really stupid, blah blah blah. And I don't think it was. This wouldn't be here today. People wouldn't be talking about Woodstock 56 years later if there wasn't something really phenomenal that happened there.
I want to thank you so much for coming back. I want to thank you for being so generous to take the time to talk to me. And it's such a gift to me and our listeners that you're able to share this with us.
Well, thank you, Jason. I'm honored, really, and I appreciate that all the work you guys are doing to keep this story alive and keep it truthful. That's very important. Thank you.
Now, that's not all there is to this story. In fact, two of the most historically valuable anecdotes that Minna was able to share with the Museum of Bethel Woods did not even make it into the feature that you just heard. But you're going to get to hear one of them now. Maybe we'll hear the other one later. Here's Minna Trogett at the museum before going on the tour of the site.
This is kind of funny. When we were leaving town on Thursday night, there were six of us that were driving up here in a Volkswagen Beetle. We were a little crazy.
Six in the Beetle.
Yeah, and we had all been at work, and I had to work, whatever. We were leaving at 10 o'clock at night. And as we were packing and everything, my mom comes, wait a minute, and comes out of the into the driveway with two huge cans of Chef Boyardee spaghetti. And said, you might need this. And we were, she said, you know, so you'll have something to eat if you need something to eat. Moms, right? And we were like, oh, Mom, we don't have room, blah, blah, blah. But we said, okay, and we fit it somewhere. Well, thank goodness she did, because we fed about 15 people one night around a campfire that nobody had eaten or had any food. I mean, the hog farm was great. They fed us, you know, rice and raisins. But we had a little spaghetti party around a campfire.
And here's Neil Hitch, chief curator of the museum at Bethel Woods.
This is Minna's story, right? This is what makes it really kind of, I don't want to say special, but or engaging or maybe interesting, I don't know. Which is, you know, so many people come with nothing. That's the big story. That if there's a single person with something, and then they share that with other people, like that's the miracle or the reality, right? Like you... And their stories are funny to us because it seems like you have so many people with nothing, yet I have this one thing and I'm going to share it with everyone. Though it's not enough, we'll do it anyway. Everyone's going to get one spoonful of whatever.
I went on the tour. It did seem special. It seemed special for her, but it also seemed special for you. And I'm just wondering if you can just talk a little bit about why did it seem special to you?
To have her come to the site and be able to take her to the places she described, to be able to watch her remember and have her talk about her friends and these memories that are 56 years ago, it's amazing. It is a gift, right? Like, it's amazing to be on the site and watch people remember and then get emotional about the experience that was so tactile and so, in some cases, defining, and it's happening right there. You can watch them remember it. It's really amazing.
That is it for the local edition. Woodstock Week continues tomorrow morning on Radio Chatskill with Tim Bruno. And check out all of our Woodstock coverage and more at Radio Catskill's brand new podcast page, Woodstock, Lost and Found. That's right. Go to WJFFradio.org, click on podcasts, look for Woodstock, Lost and Found. It's all right there. For now, stay with us. We've got more news from The Daily up next. This is Radio Catskill.